Thank you. Good to see you. Good to have everybody with us tonight. And as Ron said, it has been a beautiful day in Carolina today. And I have really worked, so if I fall asleep on you, you'll know the reason why. I stayed busy all day today. I mean, I really had something to do the entire time. And it's good to stay busy, but it's also good to have a little break between these times. Tonight's study, if I haven't made a mistake somewhere, it's study 15 on our study of walk, or really manner of life, if you will. And today is the 17th day of December, 2014, and it's Miss Lori's birthday and my sister-in-law Juanita's birthday. So, happy birthday to you.
Our happy birthday song until after the study.
And we made it last week. We made it down through in chapter 4 down through verse 11. And I wanted to go to 18 or 19, and then we'll skip a few chapters, because the next walk appears in the 8th chapter of, in the 8th chapter of 1 Samuel. But, in Samuel, this is getting toward the end of the judge period. And so they had judges for 450 years, I think the Bible says. And all but 2 years in the last part of it, Samuel had it. It was the judge all but for the 38 years of Saul's reign as king. And so that kind of gives you some picture of where we are, and time-wise in this situation. And so I wanted to do the rest of this, and because it has to do with Eli and Phinehas and Hophni. And last week we left off in verse 11. And I want to go back to 1 Samuel 4:11 on page 372 if you have a companion Bible. And they were in a battle. And the people of Israel were fighting the Philistines. And they were in a battle. And so the battle was with Israel. They sent over to Shiloh and asked that the Ark of the Covenant be brought to the battle, because they wouldn't do it too good. And this wasn't a command of God. This was just somebody's idea. I don't know whose idea it was, but they thought maybe if the ark was there, that God would honor the presence and take care of them. But certainly it didn't work out that way. And we realized from what we had read before that God had promised some things to Eli and to his offspring. And he had made the statement that there would be no old man in Eli's house. They would die younger. So in verse 11 it says, "And the ark of God was taken, and the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were slain." And so that was a quote of God, and I believe it was quoted that they die the same day. And so, in this battle, And these two, they went with the Ark of the Covenant. Where it went, they went. But although he said they were sons of Belial, they didn't really believe in God, but, you know, this was like part of a job description, and this is the situation that they had. Yeah. And so in verse 12 it says, this was a kind of a one day, up to this point, it had been a battle, but, you know, it's kind of getting down to the situation here to where it's coming to an end. And it says in 12, and there ran a man of Benjamin, or the tribe of Benjamin, out of the army, and came to Shiloh the same day with his clothes rent and with earth upon his head. And so that kind of gives you an idea that he was in dire straits, because, you know, a lot of times these people would dress in sackcloth and put ashes upon themselves, for a purging, if you will. So here is a fugitive, or an Ish, of the tribe of Benjamin. And he came to Shiloh. He came from the slaughter. And he says it was the same day. And so that same day tells me that, you know, they wasn't that far from Shiloh where the battle was going on, because in the same day he could make it from the battle site to, back to where the, tabernacle had been set up. You know, in Shiloh, they set the tabernacle up, and it stayed there for a long time. So it was less than a day's journey. And he said his clothes was rent, and he had dirt up, earth upon his head, so he was torn and dirty, which, like, you know, if you were doing a stealth thing and sneaking away from the battle to go report to somebody, I guess you did whatever was necessary to get there. And then you get 13. And he says, and when he came, lo, Eli sat upon a seat by the wayside watching, for his heart trembled for the ark of God. And when the man came into the city and told it, all of the city cried out. So that lo was certainly put there for emphasis. And it said Eli sat on a seat, or according to the notes, it was the seat. Evidently, he had a seat reserved for himself near the gate or by the wayside, watching. And where they had in Shiloh had set themselves up, and it wasn't a temporary thing. So that wasn't quite a temporary thing. It was really a more permanent thing for him to do, is to have a seat that he could oversee the comings and goings of the things of Shiloh there, okay? And he says his heart trembled. And I'm sure that they were palpitations, you know, that we sometimes feel when we get very anxious about something. It seems like your heart may skip a few beats or something. And I kind of thought about that when I read this. So he don't know, you know. Eli don't know yet, because he was having these feelings for the Ark of God. And because it wasn't there anymore, had it? I guess that may have been the first time that it had ever been separated from the temple. I don't know. I really don't know. But I do know this. It's the first time, according to Scripture, that it had ever been in battle. I mean, that they'd ever carried it to a battle site. Hmm. And this wasn't a normal, this wasn't a normal thing. But see, when they brought it there, Israel got a boost in the arm, so to speak. They kind of shouted, and the Philistines said, "Ooh, what's going on over there?" And so they went to their spies, and the spies told them, said, "The Ark of God had come into the camp." And they said, "Ooh, you know." And they thought they couldn't take it, but they had already bit it off, so they figured they had to chew it. And so,
psychological warfare.
Yeah, it was something they thought they could do psychologically to get an edge here. But, he said also the man, came, into the city and told it all, and the city cried out. So, Eli, I don't know if he heard the story or the bad news, but he heard the crying out. So the bad news got around in the city, and it said all of the city cried out. So it was actually a reversal of that when the ark came into Israel's camp. They shouted, but now they're crying out because the ark has been taken. And so it was a reverse of what was going on there. And let's just read on and see what happened. In 14 it says, "When Eli heard the noise of the crying, he said, 'What meaneth the noise of this tumult?' And the man came in hastily and told Eli." So he got a first-hand report from this Benjamite that had left the battle and had come with the news. So Eli heard the noise of the crying, and he wanted to know what meaneth this. And this was the same question the Philistines asked when they heard the shout. They said, "Oh, what meaneth this?" And so the man, or this Ish, came in hastily or with haste, and he told Eli. He gave him the bad news. And we get down to 5:15, and it said, "Now Eli was 98 years old, and his eyes were dim that he could not see." So we have a little, almost a parenthetical insertion here, and it gives us a little information on Eli as to what his condition was. He was an old man, and his eyes were dim. He was either almost blind or couldn't see at all. And so I don't know why he would need to sit by the gate unless he had somebody to tell him what was going on, because I think he was just about that blind. You know, he might could see a little bit, but certainly he wasn't in a condition to be leading the people as he was trying to do. And it says in 16, "And the man said unto Eli, 'I am he that came out of the army, and I fled today out of the army.' And he says, 'What is there done, my son?' So he says, 'I am the one that came out or fled this day or today.' And Eli asked in 17, and I put down here, note the six ands as information. And it so the question, what is there done, my son? And the messenger answered, and said, that's two ands, Israel has fled before the Philistines, and there's the third one. And there had been also a great slaughter among the people. And four times, thy two sons also, Hophni and Phinehas, five times, are dead. And the ark of God is taken. So that's six ands. He just went on and added to it, added to it, added to it, added to it. And Eli, that broke his heart. So it's pretty self-explanatory there. And then we get to 18.
Not a whole lot of wonderful news.
No, it was all bad. And it came to pass, or as the news unfolded as to the ark of God. And it came to pass when he made mention of the ark of God that Eli fell from the seat backwards by the side of the gate. So that tells you where he was sitting. And his neck broke, and he died. For he was an old man and heavy. And he had judged Israel 40 years. Same day, all three of them died. Wow. The two sons with the Ark of the Covenant. Or they went wherever it went, evidently. And then when the guy came to Eli fell out of his chair backwards. And I really think that it probably was a reaction to the bad news that he had heard. He just, a blind man doesn't have much depth of perception. And so he fell backwards and his neck broke. And now all three of the family are dead. So Eli had judged Israel for 40 years. And that is another time of probation. This is a probationary period. Seems like at this time, ever since the trek in the wilderness, things have been going in 40s. And it done it, done it, done it, done it. Now, let's look at 19, because I didn't know where to get involved into this or not, but I think we got time tonight, so we'll go ahead and do 19 now. So the Eli and his two sons are now out of the house, so to speak. But he had a daughter. Eli did have a daughter-in-law. Phinehas was married. It doesn't say whether Hophni was married or not. But it says this, and his daughter-in-law, Phinehas' wife, was with child, near to be delivered. So when all this was going on, she was very pregnant and just about her due date. And it said that when she heard the tidings that the ark of God was taken and that her father-in-law and her husband were dead, she bowed herself and travailed, for her pains came upon her. So she went into labor, just right straight. And then uh, So he said, about the time of her death, the women that stood by her and said unto her, fear not, for thou hast borne a son. But she answered not, neither did she regard it. She named the child Ichabod, saying, the glory is departed from Israel, because the ark of God was taken, and because of her father-in-law and her husband. And she said, the glory is departed from Israel, for the ark of God is taken. So they all had great feelings for the ark of God, the chest that held the artifacts that they carried around with them all the time. So that was the ending of Eli and Phinehas and Hophni, because they had stood up and cursed God. And God wasn't going to let them get away with it. And I keep thinking about the difference between that and the grace that we now have. Because, you know, man can shake his fist at God and go right on.
I also wonder how they took it. You remember when they carried the ark, they had the rings and the staves.
Yeah.
And they had to carry it by not touching it.
Yeah.
Somebody touched it one time to keep it from falling over. And they died. Somebody of his, remember that?
And then everybody else that looked into it, and we're going to get into this a little bit, that everybody that looked into it, even the Philistines, got hemorrhoids. Yeah. You know, they call them hemorrhoids. The Bible cleans up things a little bit, you know, quite often in words. So if we look at chapter 5 and do a little on 5, 6, and 7, because I want to pick up at the end of 7. The 5, 6, and 7, I've got a little summary here. And we'll start with 5. Now, I'm not going to read the verses as such, but you can read along if you want to, or go back and read. But the Philistines now have got the Ark of God. And so they took the Ark from a place called Ebenezer, and they went to Ashdod with it. And they were going to house it, and with their isle of God called Dagon. And so, you know, these were idolatrous people. And so they had an idol there at Ashdod in a temple there, and they had, you know, worship to this thing and all this. So they took the Ark of the Covenant and put it in beside their idol. And so it stayed there with them for 7 months. But after all of the things that begin to happen to them, they figured they better get rid of this thing, you know. And
didn't work out.
So, in the meanwhile, the first night when they put it in there with their idol, they got up the next morning, and they went in to where their idol Dagon was, and Dagon was falling to the floor. It was laying in the floor. Hadn't been anybody there. They saw, but their idol was laying on the floor. And they said, wow. So They put the thing back up in its place. And they went in the next morning again. And here was Dagon. You know, after they found him on the floor the first morning, the day after that, they found him on the floor again. Dagon's head and hands were amputated. They had been cut off. So, was God not telling them something here? And so, you know, the Philistines were so displeased with this business, and also they began to be smoted with hemorrhoids, and they said, we got to get rid of this thing. Said, it's not really helping us any. And so they carried the Ark of God to the city of Gath, to where another one of their lords were. They had five lords, the Philistines did. They had five lords, and so they went.
Where the giants were from.
Huh?
Some of the giants were from.
Yeah, right. And so that's where they went with the Ark of God to Gath. And so when they got over there at Gath, God sent the hemorrhoids upon them and brought destruction upon that city. And so, it was wherever it was creating destruction for the Philistines. You know, it was, they got to passing it around kind of like a hot potato, you know, in that sense. And so it went next to Ekron. And when it got to Ekron, over there, they had the same problems that they had in Gath. And so they got to ask him questions. And so we get into chapter 6. And this is a kind of a summation of chapter 6. And the very first verse of chapter 6, the name of the ark got changed. It's not the Ark of God anymore. It's the Ark of Jehovah. Ark of the Lord. First time it's called the Ark of the Lord. In 1 Samuel 6:1. Okay. And so the Philistines, they call their priests together. They have priests, you know, and the worship of idol worship and all this stuff. It goes right along with, the real situation. It's just a substitute thing. And so they call their priests together and they inquired what is to be done with this ark. They said, man, you know, we can't stand much of this. What are we going to do with it? And so their priest advised them to make a trespass offering and place it in the ark and send it back. Well, the question went up, well, what do we put in there for a trespass offering? And, you know, their answer is always something made out of gold. And so they said, okay, put in the ark 5 golden hemorrhoids and 5 golden mice. And that's the number of the lords of the Philistines. There's one for each head of each group that they had. And so they said, well, maybe there's something to this thing, or maybe we've just fallen into some bad luck. And we want to know which it is, you know. We really want to know which it is. So they went so far as to do this. Now, I don't know what a golden emerald looks like. But I kind of got an idea of what golden mice look like. But they made a new cart. Well, it wasn't made according to God's plan and wasn't made to God's specification. So anything that had to do with worship of God has certain specific things that need to be done. And it wouldn't have mattered with them anyway because, you know, they weren't God's people. So they were going to pay for it one way or the other. So here's what they done. They made a new cart. And they said, what are we going to pull it with? So they said, okay, we're going to pull it with two new kine that's never been yoked together. We're going to put these two heifer cows. We're going to take their calves away from them. And that's what a kine is, if you don't know. It is a heifer, a young heifer that's just had one calf. And, you know, they're pretty belligerent about their babies. You know, they want to protect their young, especially after just having that baby for the first time. They've had that great motherly instinct and the obligation. But they took the calves, you know, and then they yoked these kine together. And they put them to the cart and put the ark on the cart and they sent it down the road and they said, okay, we're going to send this thing to Beth Shemesh, Shemeth. And these lords of the Philistines, they were going to walk behind the cart. They were going to follow the cart. They were going to see, make sure where it went. And this Beth Shemeth is called the city of the house of the sun. And so, they sent these two young heifers down the road, had taken their calves, and they were bawling and all as they went down, you know, I guess probably looking for their young, more so than wanting to pull a cart that they had never been hooked to or anything like that. And so it said that there was Israelites were working in the field reaping wheat. So it was in the spring of the year, probably April or May, because, you know, you plant wheat in the fall of the year. I think Roger can tell you about, the seed man can tell you about that, that you got to put that wheat in and it winters and it gives away its life, and then in the spring of the year, when it takes a hold and comes forth, it's aged to a point where it will have the seed, it will have its offspring. And if you wait and plant it in the spring of the year, my understanding of that was that it won't have anything but grass. It'll just be more grass. It won't have the heads on it. So, it kind of tells you, you know, what time of the year it was. And it says, and they rejoiced when they saw it. And it said, and the Levites got the thing. And so they used the cart for wood. And they offered up the kine for a burnt offering. So that, this was what the Levites did with the cart, which wasn't according to the plan of God. And the two young heifers, you know, for a burnt offering. And so it displeased God so much that all this was going on that it cost the Philistines now 50,070 men. Because it says, for they had looked in the ark. They had looked in the chest. They had opened it up and looked in. Everybody that looked in, if you were curious enough to look in, you were done. When the Lord took vengeance upon them, you were done. So it cost Israel 35,000 men. And so here it cost the Philistines 50,070 men because they had looked into the ark. Now we get into the summation of chapter 7. And we're not hitting everything here. We're just kind of going over the main theme of things here that you kind of need to know in order to get where we're going in the study. It said the men of Kirjath-Jearim, this is where the ark went to next. And it was back in Israel's control here. But Kirjath-Jearim is the walled city of Jearim. That's what a Kirjath is. Anytime you see Kirjath in scripture, it generally means a walled city. And Israel had them some walled cities. And so this was the city of Jearim. They brought the ark there to Abinadab. And Abinadab, he set apart one of his sons, Eliezer, to keep this ark. And I don't know how long he thought the ark would be with him, but it wound up being there for 20 years. So, you know, it wasn't with the tabernacle anymore. It was separated from that. And for this 20 years, the children of Israel lamented after the Lord. They were, you know, they were feeling regretful for all the mistakes they had made, for all the things they had done, and for not listening to him. And he had told them more than one time what was going to happen to them if they didn't follow his will and walk in the ways that he wanted them to walk. And it said that the children of Israel put away their idols and served the Lord only. They put away the Baal stuff and put away the Ashtaroth stuff they decided to make a change and serve God. And so Samuel got back in the picture again. And it says, Samuel called for the Israelites together at Mizpah. And Samuel prayed and judged the people there. And And it said the Philistines again went up against Israel to do battle. And Israel turned to Samuel. They asked Samuel to make for them an offering to save them from the enemy. They didn't want to get involved again with all this fighting and so on. And he did that. And while they were arrayed in battle, God caused a great thunder upon the Philistines. I mean, it must have been some kind of thunder, because when they were arrayed there to take on Israel once again, it evidently rattled the world, because it scared them so bad, they decided, no, we've had enough. We're going to leave this alone. So when it thundered, this great thunder upon the Philistines, they fled and they took off. And so, having taken off, we're gonna go to chapter 7 and we're gonna start at verse 13. So turn the page, if you will, if you haven't already done it, to the 7th chapter, and we're going to start at 13 pick up our study right there. So it said in 13, so the Philistines were subdued or beaten back, and they came no more into the coast of Israel. That is the borders or the boundaries of Israel. And the hand of the Lord was against the Philistines all the days of Samuel. So for the rest of Samuel's life, they didn't have to really put up with the Philistines anymore. And as I said, Samuel lived 38 of the 40 years of Saul's reign. So just about all of Saul's reign, Samuel was still alive. So this tells you something right here that they didn't have to worry so much about that, because there was peace. In 14 it says so. And let's look at 14. Let me get my note page turned over here. In 14 it said, and the cities which the Philistines had taken from Israel were restored to Israel, from Ekron even unto Gath. So you see, they got back Gath, which was under control of the Philistines for a long time. And it said, and the coast or the boundaries thereof did Israel deliver out of the hands of the Philistines, and there was peace between Israel and the Amorites, or the Philistines, I guess. I don't know if that's another word.
In my mind, the way I kind of look at the Philistines is they were like, they're almost like ISIS is now. They were made up of a lot of different factions of Ites, Amorites, Girgashites, Hittites.
All those, it was against God.
Yep. It was kind of like a conglomerate.
That sounds like. So, the cities taken here, was restored, and of course it gives you a list of those cities, and of course those in between Ekron and the Gath, all that lies between them, were delivered or freed, and they had peace. And that peace was until the end of Samuel's life. And you get to 15, it said, Samuel judged Israel all the days of his life. So Samuel was God's man in charge. There was no doubt about Samuel now being God's man in charge of things, because he went around doing the judging, but he had two sons, and those two sons didn't do what they were supposed to do. It seems like we fall into a rut here that it seems like the fathers of some of these things do pretty good, but when it gets down to their children, they just don't follow in dad's footsteps for one reason or the other. And so you get 16, talking about Samuel. And he went from year to year in circuit to Bethel, to Gilgal, and to Mizpah. And he judged Israel in all these places. So evidently there was smaller places in between. And he was kind of like what we used to call a circuit judge. He would go from place to place, and if anybody had a problem with God, well, he was the man to work it out between them and God. Now, if it was between man and man, you know, that was a different situation. But if it was between man and God, if there was anything between man and God, Samuel was the guy. He was the one that judged Israel in all these places. And then you get to 17, and he says, and his return was to Ramah. So I guess this was the end of the circuit, was back at his father's house. You know, Ramah was where his mom and dad lived, and they went every year to Shiloh for the offering, you know, to do the sacrifices. So at the end of the circuit was at Ramah, and it was at his father's house. And evidently, after the Ark of the Covenant was taken away, and it was gone over at Ramah, they had been an altar built there at his house where he could do his bidding when he was at home. And it says, you know, there was an altar there, because it said it was in the notes that it was built after the death of Eli and the ark taken, because Shiloh was now forsaken. They had, I don't know what they did with the tabernacle there, but it said Shiloh was now forsaken and the ark was separated from the tabernacle. So, in order to have an altar and to do the service of the people there, evidently he built an ark at his home, at his residence, at his father's residence. Of course, he never lived there much. He was just a young kid when he left, you know. Okay. So now we get into 1 Samuel 8. How much time we got left? Let's see. We got about 5-6 minutes. And it said, and it came to pass in chapter 8, verse 1, and when it came to pass when Samuel was old, that he made his sons judges over Israel. So he appointed his son judges over Israel when he became old. Well, let's see what old is here. There's a note on in the companion side of 1 Samuel 8:1. It said old. From 28:3. He predeceased Saul by about 2 years. Consequently, He acted for 38 years after Saul's anointing, and this anointing took place in 1000 B.C., and it lasted to 962 B.C. When he anointed David, he would be about 86 years old and live to about the age of Eli, which was 98 years. And I'm not so sure I agree with that, but I'd have to go back and do some more studying in order to agree with this last part of this. Okay, so we see that we have a little more information here. And it says in verse 2, now the name of his firstborn, talked about the two sons that Samuel had. Doesn't say anything about his wife, but he has two sons. We don't get that information here. Now the name of his firstborn was Joel, and the name of his second, Abiah. They were judges in Beersheba. So they weren't in the same place that he was in. They were judges in a different part of Israel. And his sons, look at verse 3. And his sons walked not in his ways, but turned aside after lucre, and took bribes and perverted judgment. So we kind of see the same thing happening, in a sense, with Samuel that happened to Eli. But they quickly, you know, called Samuel in on this thing. So it says in 3, and they walked, and his sons walked not. And here again is the word walk. So we come up to one of our words, walk not. Their manner of life, they walked not in his way. So their manner of life was not Samuel's manner of life. It wasn't Samuel's way of doing anything. It says they turned aside. And that turned aside there was stooped to extortion. You know, they took bribes and this was contrary to what was they were to do according to Deuteronomy 16:19. So they seemed to want to be in it for what they could get out of it. And it says in verse 4, all the elders of Israel gathered themselves together and came to Samuel unto Ramah. So they decided they better call a meeting and get with God's man and see if they can straighten this mess out. Then, it says after a point of time, you know, then something triggered it to where they decided they'd need to do something about it. And it said, all the elders of Israel gathered. They met in one place. And they probably besieged Ramah. They went in force to Samuel's house. They came to his residence. In verse 5, it's kind of telling too, and it says, and said unto him, or said unto Samuel, behold, thou art old, and thy sons walk not in thy ways. In the next page, if I can get the page turned. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations. Woo. This hit Samuel right straight in the face. They said, behold, and that's asterismosis, the word used for emphasis. And they said, thou art old, and thy sons walk not in thy ways. Their manner of life is not your manner of life. And so them en masse was talking for the group of the Israelites, of which would make them a majority, if you will, to that sense. And it says, now, they wanted it at this time. Now, they said, at this time, make us a king to judge us. And like all the nations. So, this is a pretty telling thing. And I wanted to get at least to this part because Ronnie had just completed this thing with the Israelites and with Jesus before Pilate. And he said, make us a king to judge us. So the Hebrew mercenaries, monarchy, the Hebrew monarchy, started this by choosing Saul, and they ended it by choosing Caesar.
Yes, good statement.
What about that? They said, make us a king. We want a king. And God was, then God and Samuel got together, and God told Samuel, said, it's not you. You know, it's your offspring has caused this, but the people just, you know, they want to be like other people. They want a king.
Like all the other nations have.
Yeah, like the nations. They said, well, we see all these folks
down here. Which proves that absolute monarchy, or basically dictatorship, still prevalent there today.
Yeah, well,
within that region, it goes back all the way to biblical.
Well, God says,
thousands of years ago.
God says, it ain't you, Saul. They dislike me. It's not you. It's,
yeah.
They don't want me in their life either. They don't want me to judge them. So this was the situation. And he said, and so, you know, as it goes on, they're going to get a king, and they're going to get Saul. But I thought that note was very telling on 5 there. It says, make us a king. Hosea 13:10-11, Acts 13:20-21. Note the words, gave judges and desired a king. The Hebrew monarchy, thus began with the choosing of Saul and ended with the choosing of Caesar. You know, whenever it was before Pilate, Ronnie brought it out in his study on Sunday mornings that Pilate said 5 times, I believe, I find no fault in this man. And they said, and then he went back and he said, well, here's your king. And they said, we have no king but Caesar.
Yeah. You'll so, crucify your king?
Yeah, that's the last choosing. That's the last statement concerning king. You know, were pretty close that they needed, because soon after that, uh, you know, after a period of time, their clock was unplugged to that point. So, that was what we find in verse 5. And we'll do verse 6, and then we'll stop, and we'll pick it up there and go on. It said, but the thing displeased Samuel, when they said, now make us a king. But the thing displeased Samuel when they said, give us a king to judge us. And Samuel prayed to the Lord. So it said, therefore displeased was evil in the eyes of, or i.e. evil in not waiting for God's time, for God's king that had been promised in Genesis 17, 6 and 16, Genesis 35, 11, 49, 10, Numbers 24, 17, and Deuteronomy 17, 14 through 20. And so it says that Samuel prayed unto the Lord Jehovah. And so, see, they had the understanding that they had a king on the horizon somewhere, but they couldn't wait. They didn't want to wait.
We want one now.
It's
tired of these judges.
Just like everybody else, they want it now. So, with 8:6, we'll stop there at 8:6, and we'll pick up with 8:7 and go on from there. And just to give you a little heads up, God tells Samuel, you know, it's not you. They hate me. They don't want me in their life. They proved that all the way back on this trip, on this journey that we've been going through, this walk that we've been going through. They haven't followed instructions. And look what we've had to do. You know, look at all of the problems and all of the things that we've had to do thus far, you know, to get these people to this point. Now they want a king. So now we're going to let them choose the king. See, it's not God's choosing, it's the people's choosing. Then the next king will be God's choice. That'll be David. And so, you know, I guess the reason we're doing some of these stops here and going through a lot of this stuff that really seemed to be gross and all these troubles and killings and things was God's plan being worked out piece by piece. It was like putting, you know, as we go along, it's kind of like putting one more piece of the picture in the puzzle.
Yeah.
Of a big puzzle. And, which makes it a little clearer and a little clearer as it goes along. But nevertheless, that's the way it works. So, time's up. We thank you for, putting up with our summations there. And because, you know, to read it all the way through, it would take quite much longer. And so we just kind of hit the high spots and it came down to this situation with Saul. Because with Saul and with David, it's important that, because this was important times in Israel's history. And period, and we see that even though the dads probably had at one time had a good bit of influence on these kids, they like kids today, if they choose not to go along with what dad and mom wants, they'll seek out their own thing and look for it. Sometimes they pay for it. And a lot of times, this day and age, mom and dads don't know what they're looking for either. So that makes a big difference too. So, there's all kind of lessons here that, we can get out of this. But the fact is that, you know, in this economy, where we are right now in Samuel, Kings, it was a different economy than what we have today. Because since Christ came, and since He did for us what He did and revealed us, now what we have concerning God's Word in total, we're without excuse. We are certainly without excuse.
If anybody ever was.
And we need to remember that as we go along and realize that when we get over there to where Israel was set aside, that we need to really bear down on those books to really understand what our hope truly is. So thank you much, and hope you got something out of it up to this point, because it's, for me, going back over a lot of this has been edifying to me. If nobody else, the teacher got something from it. God bless.